This is Mae Brussel. After that 1 minute break, this is the second half of program 744. In the Houston Post, there was a brief comment about violence and the assassinations in Sweden. And the article said, Palme's murder is Sweden's first major political assassination since Gustav III was killed in 1792, which plunged this country of 8 million into deep grief. Another article, a new witness describes possible Palme assassin, and the first attempt after he was murdered was tried to blame, as I mentioned last week briefly, the Red Army faction, the Holger Mines Commando. But on the other hand, they said the path of the bullet through the vertebrae, the main artery and windpipe, indicated the killer knew where to hit his victim. A story in the Monterey Herald and the Christian Science Monitor, March the 9th, on Palme's slaying, it says the neo-Nazi terrorism is on the rise in Sweden, aimed primarily at the waves of immigrants who flooded the country in recent years. Stockholm has already been the scene of racially motivated battles. At present, one-tenth of the population is foreign-born, and the children are, every fourth child is foreign extraction. Here the motives may be clearer. Palme had strongly backed the immigration policy, but so far the Swedish neo-Nazi groups so far have no record of murder, but they don't have to be Swedish neo-Nazi groups. You remember Ali Majan, his links to Nazis in Turkey and in Germany. Instead of the German left, they are catching on that there are these Nazi groups in Sweden. Another story, March the 9th in the Monterey Herald, about searching for this assassin. They said they have contact with a person who received an anonymous letter with interesting information about his death. The clues they're following seriously. In the meanwhile, a Turkish newspaper printed the photograph of a fugitive Kurdish militant they said was a suspect in the Palme killing. They released one suspect from Germany, and they have released one from Yugoslavia that they had last week, but they've been told that the Kurdish activists and some Turkish participants might have been involved. Both bullets were sent to West Germany Federal Police for identification, which is another mistake, and they're convinced that this was well planned in advance. Well, they had 6 months to plan it if there was a 6-month investigation on Mr. Kurt Waldheim, and it wouldn't take that long to plan the particular murder. It'll be interesting to see the links to, if it's linked to the Turkish fascists and that element, because Robert Keith Gray, the public relations office that is the right hand of Ronald Reagan, represents the country of Turkey, that military dictatorship. It's an extension of William Casey's CIA, similar to the Mullen Associates I've cited. It's just part of the Central Intelligence Agency. The CIA wants Waldheim to be head of Austria without any idea of an alternate or more liberal person there. And Elaine von Damm, a protege of Otto von Bolschwing from that same territory, is situated in Austria. And I'm sure that the leads to somebody from Turkey or that part would be very interesting. They are suspecting, because of certain information, that this could be a fact. Another story, police find the bullet that killed Palme, political motives linked to slaying. You better believe it's political. And another article, rare bullets, a powerful gun used by killer, fuel speculation. He was a professional hitman, and this special kind of a gun is a type. It's the most powerful that you can have. It penetrates a bulletproof vest, a very complicated weapon, it seems, and a special kind of a gun. Michael Harrington wrote an article in the LA Times, Olaf Palme, Socialism Was a Moral Passion, and he described having dinner one evening with West German Chancellor Willy Brandt. Next to Brandt sat Michael Manley, the former Prime Minister of Jamaica, who's out, and Agapati Aquino, the brother of the slain Philippine opposition leader Benigno Aquino. So Olaf Palme, Willy Brandt, Michael Manley, and Mr. Aquino, the brother of the late Benigno Aquino. Palme joked about his days, his youth movement. He talked about disarmament. He thought disarmament could free funds for a truly concerted effort to end poverty in the third world. For him, the personal, the moral, and the political were of a piece. And that, of course, is the biggest stumbling block to poverty all over the world, is the making of the weapons. Anthony Lewis wrote a nice tribute to Olaf Palme. He quotes him as saying, "Complacency is a terrible danger. A politician shouldn't say anything's fine. He should talk about what's wrong. In Sweden, we can be happy about not having the excitement of some of these other countries and their race problems, but there is a risk for us, and you have to activate people." And Anthony Lewis went on to say that he emphasized that Sweden should be a caring society where people have a responsibility for each other. And back in 1969, he wanted to make Sweden more aware of the world, and he did in an extraordinary extent. He was known around the world for his efforts on behalf of arms control and peace, of economic development. He was chairman of the Independent Commission on Disarmament and Security Issues. He had important figures from 17 countries, including the United States and the Soviet Union, and he had a consensus about sensitive issues of national power. And in 1982, he had a report, Common Security, that remains a model of reason. One noteworthy aspect of the report was that the Soviet Union agreed to call for an on-site inspection if needed to verify compliance with arms control agreements. Last year, he joined five other heads of government around the world in calling for a reversal of nuclear arms race. Before the Geneva meeting, they urged Reagan and Gorbachev to suspend nuclear tests for a year and negotiate a comprehensive test ban treaty. Mr. Gorbachev has done it, and our warfare state has not done it, and I know that they have to be related to the murder of Olof Palme, who has an idea different than those in power who now control the guns and the means of wiping these people out. This Anthony Lewis article goes on, Palme did not act as an individual in those international efforts. He made his people care. He showed that a small country on the fringe, long committed to neutrality, could become deeply committed as a society to international goals, justice, freedom, compassion, and survival. He is internationally engaged, his successor, Mr. Ingvar Carlson, on scientific and environmental questions, and he will continue the efforts that Palme made. And then the bottom of the article says, the terrible irony is he died by unreasoning violence. No death since John Kennedy's has been more fearful witness of the kind of world that this has become. And I think Indira Gandhi, of course, is another leader gunned down in the same way, and Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King. But Olof Palme has left us an example of his caring. And this is by Anthony Lewis, a very nice article. Now, the day of the ceremonies for Olof Palme, there is a picture in the newspaper of Edward Kennedy, Senator Edward Kennedy, attending the services. And across from the picture is Barbara Bush, it quotes, appearing to weep. And the most nauseating thing about this whole picture and the article is that among those mourners was Henry Kissinger, a target of Palme's criticism of the U.S. war effort in Vietnam. Barbara Bush, the wife of Vice President Bush, attended the funeral. George Bush, the former director of the CIA, with the blood of Orlando Letelier and Ronnie Moffitt dripping from his hands when he was director of CIA and they were killed in Washington. He was in Tunisia with the Assistant Undersecretary of State Richard Murphy. He met Saturday with Tunisian President Habib Bourguiba to discuss the future of Tunisia. George Bush goes to Mr. Bourguiba's the day that Olof Palme is being buried and doesn't have the decency to show up, and then sends Henry Kissinger, who's the antithesis of every single thing that Olof Palme stood for or Dag Hammarskjöld stood for. And then to ice that lousy, filthy cake was an article with William Buckley, March the 9th, Olof Palme, and he goes on to say there's something appealing. Now listen to this as against the Anthony Lewis article. If he doesn't like him, he shouldn't talk about him this way right when the body's being buried. He says there's something appealing about Olof Palme, even if he did his best during his long career to make Sweden uninhabitable. After finishing Kenyon College in Ohio, young Palme visited 34 American cities in search of poverty. It didn't take long to find it. He realized that from this, the richest country in the world, there's poverty. He drew his devotion to socialism that he nurtured in Sweden. James Burnham once remarked about Mrs. Roosevelt that she turned all her world into a personal slum project. This is William Buckley, who formed Young Americans for Freedom with Charles Willoughby, from the German Freikorps, Mr. Wiedenbach his name is, with Ronald Reagan and Robert Morris, and that Young American for Freedom gang that came in from Munich, Germany, to Dallas as of June to November 62 and played a role in the murder of John Kennedy. This glib, rotten William Buckley is saying these things, turning Sweden into something uninhabitable. He said Olof Palme, the friend of the common man, marched alongside North Vietnamese ambassador to the Soviet Union to protest American armed colonialism in South Vietnam. Then Palme, the brilliant intellectual straight A student, denounced the carpet bombing of Hanoi, in which fewer than 300 people were killed, and which precipitated the peace initiative of 1972, denouncing the United States as being on a par with Nazis and who were behind the bombing of Guernica in 1937. Now, Fritz Kramer was the man in charge, the German Fritz Kramer, in charge of the Vietnam operations as plans officer of the Pentagon. That was Kramer's job. And Henry Kissinger, the German, ordered the bombing of Hanoi and Cambodia. That was their job, to drop those bombs. It doesn't matter how 300 or 600. It is compared to the Nazis, because they were Nazis, and that is the truth of the matter, that the Nazis from Germany took over in our Pentagon policies and did those things. And then this is the final conclusion of William Buckley, and if I sound angry, I am really angry. He said the death that greeted Palme was in a way a testimonial to his idealism. Why would anyone want to kill Palme, especially in Sweden, when 12 hours before he died, he dismissed his bodyguards? Now, that isn't that dumb. Why would anyone want to kill him when he dismissed his bodyguards? That's when you kill somebody. That you don't kill him while they have the bodyguards. He said, there are those who feel that if he had to depart the world suddenly, it would be better if he died of radioactivity or by a submarine than by navigational error, or landed on Swedish Parliament rather than in a Swedish fjord, as if that makes sense. But his death was a personal tragedy and must be focused on discreetly, even as his life was a public tragedy. I said last week that I thought Robert Dornan's calling Mr. Posner a traitorous Jew, a slimy traitorous Jew, was done on purpose on ABC. And you better be listening a little more and reading a little bit more about what these people who have access to the White House night and day are saying. Imagine writing an article that his life was a personal tragedy. And just a few words about Dag Hammarskjöld. I read you a section. He was in the United Nations from 1953 to 1961. And then there was that little interim where you thought took over, and then Mr. Waldheim from the Greek Nazis and the Yugoslavian Nazis, the most treacherous kind of activity, becomes the head of the United Nations. The Youthant period is similar to the Lyndon Johnson period between Kennedy's murder and when Nixon took over, or the period when Carter was an interim between Gerald Ford of the Warren Commission and Ronald Reagan. There's a little time filler to get ready for the proper succession of office till they get in who they want. So when Dag Hammarskjöld is murdered in 1961, very shortly after that, with a time period by Youthant, in comes Kurt Waldheim. I have a lot of books, three or four books, on the death of Dag Hammarskjöld and his poetry books also. One book, The Last Days of Dag Hammarskjöld, by Arthur Gavshon, is a good one. It tells about his peace mission in the Congo and describes September 18, 1981, as his plane went down and his mission for peace ended in disaster. He had an appointment with Sean Bay. I said that was his mistake. The cause of the crash has baffled experts of every land, including the special investigation team set up by Rhodesia and the United Nations. I'm sure that Mr. Waldheim, representing Austria at the time, was very anxious to find out what happened. This book asks the question, could it have been a mere accident that struck such a man at such a time? Was the airplane that carried him sabotaged and shot down by some assassin? So many crushing political problems and conflicting pressures have lately been bearing down on Hammarskjöld in his lonely struggle for peace and understanding that worldwide tributes of the man were inevitably tinged with consternation and suspicion when he went down, and that's described as personal heroism. Also, another book, Champion of World Peace, Dag Hammarskjöld, by I.E. Levine, And this is a expose also of what happened to him and the tragedy of his death and his guidance of peace missions throughout the world while he lived and as Secretary General. And he said, who is this man that the whole world mourned? They mourned Hammarskjöld. He worked closely with Olof Palme. Palme was aware of Hammarskjöld's death, I'm sure, and the scandals that within the last 6 months that Mr. Waldheim was going to have to stand up to and that he would pass along. Now, I say the big mistake was that Dag Hammarskjöld went down to the Congo to meet Mr. Shombe. And in case you don't have it, you might write to the government printing office and get that book, The Alleged Assassination Plots Involving Foreign Leaders, put out by our own government investigations in 1975. And in there are details of the plans to kill Patrice Lumumba. As I say, when he died in 1961, February 61, Dag Hammarskjöld went down to the Congo in 7 months later in 61 to meet with Mr. Shombe. And I'll do more on this later if you want. The people involved in the murder of Lumumba, Mr. Alan Dulles of the CIA, who was later put on the Warren Commission, Mr. Bissell, and the various networks of assassination teams that killed Lumumba, also then went on later after 1961, came back to the United States, and had a part in killing John Kennedy. So the tragedy in Europe, I believe, and in Greece of Mrs. Fleming dying at this time has to do with what they each knew about Mr. Waldheim, about his activities in Austria. And also, he was in law school in 1944 when Hitler was in his heyday in Austria and in Yugoslavia and Greece, and that these two world leaders had to be taken away at this time to assure the election or the confirming of the data of Waldheim's background so that in May he can become the president of Austria. If you hear a background with this tape, there is a heavy rainstorm hitting the windows, and it sounds like a hissing if you play it back. There's nothing wrong with the broadcast equipment, but we have to continue taping, and the rainstorm is very bad. By the time you get this, it'll be spring somewhere, but it is pouring in California on March the 10th, 1986. Now, I mentioned three weeks ago, on World Watchers, Ronald Reagan's State of the Union or speech to Congress about his asking for money for the disease AIDS. He spoke specifically about AIDS, and he was anxious to find what he called a focus on the prevention of AIDS. The San Francisco Examiner 3 days later had an article, Drastic Measure in Disputed AIDS Studies, and this has to do with the Hoover Institute, closely functioning and related both to Edward Teller, and this is important, and Ronald Reagan, and they are requesting money for AIDS to study that could lead to biological and chemical warfare. And I also went into that broadcast about Howard Hughes aircraft distributing $1 billion in the next few years, 5 years, for the areas of genetics, immunology, and neuroscience. The danger of Hughes aircraft, of Hoover Institute and Ronald Reagan zeroing in on AIDS. And I also mentioned that the shuttle Discovery, the one that Judith Resnick was on, previously was used for research on AIDS up in space there, and that she came from the National Institute of Health, spent years there, and got a degree there. So that the shuttle program, the Hughes Institute of Funding Immunology, the Reagan accentuation of AIDS in his State of the Union message, and the Hoover Institute coming out at the same time, the same week, was a very dangerous thing, and we should be observing it. And I also am concerned of it because of the threat to the immune system that is linked to the Advanced Genetic Sciences, the group that want to spray out here in Monterey County their live genetic bacteria. So, and the next week on program number 742, I continued into the links of those people from the Hoover Institute to the Pentagon and the distribution of the money, $1 billion, from the Hughes Institute, and did a broadcast almost just on those two items, the Hoover Institute and the Howard Hughes, that would be funding and giving out to various police people around the country money for experimentations and medical hanky-panky. I don't know what all they would be doing, but I have a pretty good idea. And then I cited the San Francisco Chronicle article, June 22nd, 1984. A spaceship, a shuttle Discovery, takes off next week with secret drug aboard as a shuttle, and said that it involved Charles Walker and experiments, and that they turned out to be experiments on AIDS. Now, along with that article I cited on the Hughes Medical Institute that I got from one paper, there's another article in the Houston Post that was sent to me March the 2nd, titled Hughes Medical Institute in a New Phase. Now, the similarity between the shuttle program went into a new phase. The shuttle disaster was part of the new program, and the Medical Institute, and this is an article about their handing out their money, and they said they've been secretive as Howard Hughes. They're now going to give money to Baylor College of Medicine, which we know they've done. Their headquarters were moved from Coconut Grove, Florida, to Bethesda, Maryland. And under the new spending program, the Hughes Institute will employ 900 researchers at 22 laboratories, and they will be funding Baylor in Houston, the University of Texas, Southwestern Medical School in Dallas. At Baylor, which leases out space for 10 Hughes investigators, they will be researching genetics and immunology, which I told you. Baylor will get $30 million for next five years. Dallas Southwestern will get $20 million in 5 years. The man distributing the money for the Hughes Medical Institute is Henry Cuss, K-U-S-S, a former deputy assistant with the Defense Department, who hands out this money. He says the Hughes Institute is not a private foundation, and he goes on to say that they will be distributing this money. And I mentioned before the immunology, but I didn't know when I cited their distribution of money and the key points that the money from Hughes Aircraft goes to the Medical Institute, and they've now sold that to General Motors for $5 million or so. So all of that money and interest goes right to the Medical Institute. And then they hand it out, and the distribution of it there in Texas is a former deputy assistant with the Defense Department. Now, the two frightening things that were in the newspaper this week, well, there were two articles, again from Houston Post. NASA funds tied to biotechnology. And this is one of the stories. Houston is trying to win NASA funding for space research, this time to establish a space biotechnology center. Now, Mr. Moore, Jesse Moore, who gave the go signal for the shuttle to go up and when it exploded, he was moved and hired 5 days before the shuttle launched this time to become head of the Houston Space Center, the Johnson Space Center in Houston. And this story goes on that there's going to be a space biotechnology center that the government will do funding up to $3.7 million for 5 years and coordinate the biotechnology research. Now, it goes on to say that the purpose of their work will be under a former astronaut, Walter Cunningham, the head of Capital Cities Group, a venture capital city that says that under conditions of space, they can open up their opportunities for new research involving genetic engineering, strengthening crops, or understanding human disease. Now, those are the three factors of advanced genetic sciences that I was concerned about, with their offices in Belgium and Sweden and in Canada, and the Max Planck Institute in Germany, putting money into California with Mr. Adams from the offices of Sullivan and Cromwell, becoming the head of the Oakland offices and setting it up. Capital's group will be run by an astronaut, a former astronaut, to head it up, where they will do genetic engineering, strengthen crops, and understanding human disease at the same time. Now, if you were spraying a bunch of Mexicans here and testing their immune system, at the same time you're making the strawberry crops get stronger and you're putting live genetic bacteria on it, you'd feel just about all those shoes. And the important thing is this Houston group, they call themselves the Grenada Corps, if you'll pardon the expression. It's a technical group that will use biotechnology to improve food production, and one of the largest firms in biotechnology field agreed to be the founding industry partner. They have a partner. And they're going to be in Houston, and the money will come to the same groups or team that the Hughes Medical Institute is doling out the money. Another story from the Houston Post for February the 20th. City sees its future in space. Houston suffered a blow when the proposal for a NASA center for commercial development of space failed to make At the time they felt like they were defeated. With space commercialization, the key component of the city's drive, they lost prestige, but they will be back in business with a new improved bid. Last year, winners for the University Business Laboratories were from Alabama and Huntsville, Alabama, and in Birmingham and Vanderbilt University and Jackson, Mississippi, the same places where the used money is going. But under the Grenada Corporation, they're going to start working with NASA. The article says congressmen attending a breakfast in Clear Lake last week appeared more concerned about the impact of Graham Rudman Hollings on the NASA budget than the Challenger accident, Cunningham said. The deficit reduction would force a $322 million cut in the space agency $7.6 million budget. So the only thing they could do is go into the commercialization center of space. Now, what is going to happen is the Heritage Foundation wrote a proposal on the space program becoming commercialized, and they want to turn it over to private people to work with immune system, with food, with human disease. And this is so dangerous, as I said before. This is like IG Farben running Auschwitz or Punamun, making rockets and bringing in the Gestapo, bringing in the workers to die. I believe that the space shuttle Challenger, now that it has gone down, is the excuse to privatize the program. Now, Rockwell, the former head of Rockwell International, I forget his first name, Mr. Rockwell, has offered to give a new $2.5 billion to the space shuttle. He doesn't need Congress. They don't need Congress, and they will commercialize it. So with unlimited billions, they can make any disease or use these commercial parts of it for killing people in the world, just like the Hoover Institute said there'll be 10 to 20 million dead within the next 10 years of AIDS. The commercialization was first described by the Heritage Foundation in a report called Slashing the Deficit Fiscal 87, a proposal by the staff of the Heritage Foundation for the budget of the U.S. government, and they called for paring the shuttle program by $500 million and beginning to privatize NASA by requiring the project's fifth shuttle be built by a private sector. But having that fourth destroyed, they can now pull in that, and already the private sector, a business, has offered to build that shuttle. They said there is a real danger to further subsidizing and monopolizing activities of NASA that could be put into, and this is for the Star Wars activity, they want to put it into that trans-atmospheric vehicle, which I told you Reagan promoted. That is another Star Wars type of plane to get to Japan in 2 hours. So what they're saying is turn the space shuttle program into private laboratories and privatize the space program. And that is exactly the script that is happening. Heritage wrote it up. And Mr. William Graham, who ordered the shuttle to go but wasn't even present at the launch, is a member of the Heritage Foundation. And by losing this one shuttle, all the problems and all the malfunctioning of the shuttle program come out. And now it can be in private hands where there's absolute secrecy off of planet Earth, where they will work on, in quotes, the immune system, on food production and disease. That is the whole team that was working at Auschwitz on understanding disease under Joseph Mengele, not the food, but the crop, the food crop and the dusting and the effect on the immune system. I believe AGS is going to work out in California. They refused to test it anywhere else in the world except Monterey, and that was decided in Europe and in New England and in Pennsylvania that it would be Monterey and Monterey only. And as I said before, they've acknowledged this past week that it does affect the immune system and makes people sick, can make them sick, and those are the farm workers, and it can also travel through the air through animals and birds. I have to do more on this next week on the tragedy of the shuttle and the manipulation of it, which I thought all along was purposeful for star purposes. But besides isolating the Star Wars and putting all the money into the Star Wars and that trans-atmospheric vehicle, then the private people get the space for their own laboratories. And then we have Gerard O'Neill's plans for Alternative 3 that have been planned since World War II. These recent articles are really scary to see how nicely it all fits together and how they've come up front with their new plans just at the time the shuttle went down. Now, I've given a lot of material. I had enough for 3 or 4 more hours. I always do. But we have to settle for this 1 hour and finish now. This is Mae Brussel, and I'll be back with you next week. And thank you for these wonderful articles that are coming my way that I can share with all of you.